Blog Talk Radio.
I am the nation. I was born on July 4th, 1776, and the Declaration of Independence is my birth certificate. The bloodlines of the world run in my veins because I offered freedom to the oppressed. I am many things and many people. I am the nation. I am 200 million living souls and the ghost of millions who have lived and died for me. I am Nathan Hale and Paul Revere. I stood at Lexington and fired the shot heard round the world. I'm Washington, Jefferson, Patrick Henry. I'm John Paul Jones, the Green Mountain Boys, and Davy Crockett. I'm Lee and Abe Lincoln. I remember the Alamo, the Maine, and Pearl Harbor. When freedom called, I answered and stayed until it was over there. I left my heroic dead in Flanders fields and in the steaming jungles of Vietnam. I am the Brooklyn Bridge, the wheatlands of Kansas, and the granite hills of Vermont. I am the coal fields of the Virginias and Pennsylvania, the fertile lands of the West, the Golden Gate and Grand Canyon. I sprawl from the Atlantic to the Pacific, 3 million square miles. I'm more than 3 million farms. I'm forest, field, mountain, and desert. I'm quiet villages, and I'm cities that never sleep. You can look at me and see Ben Franklin walking down the streets of Philadelphia. I'm Babe Ruth in the World Series. I'm 130,000 schools and colleges and 326,000 churches where my people worship God as they please. I'm a ballot dropped in a box. I am an editorial in a newspaper. And I'm a letter to a congressman. I'm Thomas Edison, Albert Einstein. I'm Horace Greeley, Will Rogers, and the Wright brothers. I'm George Washington Carver, Daniel Webster, and Jonas Salk. I'm Walt Whitman, Thomas Paine, Tom Sawyer, and Walt Disney. Yes, I am the nation, and these are the things that I am. I was conceived in freedom, and God willing, in freedom I'll spend the rest of my days. May I possess always the integrity, the courage, and the strength to keep myself unshackled, to remain a citadel of freedom and a beacon of hope to the entire world. I am the nation.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Patriot Education. My name is Terry Rowland. I'm your hostess for this evening. And as always, we are brought to you through the good offices and kind natures of www.patriotfamilies.com. A great group of people who believe in the conservative ideals of our founding fathers, who in their day were considered to be dangerous radicals. We believe that this nation was founded by men who understood that human beings are a little higher than the beasts and a little lower than the angels, and they did their best to create a climate, governmental and societal, that would allow us to rise to near the level of the angels and deal with our tendency to fall into the beast. Our topic tonight, ladies and gentlemen, is a practical vision for public education. And the question we're asking is, what do you, as the nation, think the purpose or goal of public education actually is? Is it supposed to be for creating good citizens who follow a certain political ideology? Is it a quasi-educational staff of babysitters who free up parents to work? Is it supposed to be automatic preparation for everyone to go to college, get a bachelor's degree or higher, and make a great deal of money in the process? Is it supposed to teach basic literacy so that our population will be educated enough to read and understand and think critically about who they will elect to make their laws and enforce them? I know what my vision for education is, and I know that there are probably people out there listening who will think when I expound on it that I am as radical as our founding fathers were. But I believe that education, public education, has one great purpose. Its purpose is to give children the academic tools they need to educate themselves throughout their lives. I do not believe that it is a mandatory route to college degrees. I do not believe that public education should be a substitute for parenting, spiritual counseling, psychological aid, socialization, or indoctrination into an ideology, or a cool place to meet your boyfriend or girlfriend and watch a football game. If I were given control over the educational model for our public education system in this country, I would totally scrap what we do now. Yes, I would get rid of the traditional classroom completely. Instead, I would try to create public schools on the model of a place in Arizona called Carpe Diem. I first heard about Carpe Diem through a special on Fox News that was hosted and narrated by Juan Williams. I am not normally a big fan of Juan Williams. He's a little way too progressive for me. But in this instance, he did a very good job of illustrating how Carpe Diem worked and showing how it could be a model for a real educational reform on practical grounds. Our current educational system is trying to do two mutually exclusive impossible things. It is trying to educate every single child in the United States to a specific standard of knowledge that they must achieve in a certain chronological period, as in from first grade through 12th grade, the ages of 6 to 17. At the same time, each and every one of those children should be educated at the pace and with the type of learning and presentation that they personally need to understand best to overcome their weaknesses and fortify their strengths, and still meet those objective goals that are based on chronological attendance within a school system. In a standard classroom, right now, and I'm going to use the school where I work as a model, because we are, I guess you could say, a medium-sized school. We're not really, really small, even though I live in a rural county in Virginia, nor are we huge with graduating class of high school of 2,000 people, as in a large city. The middle school where I work has a student body of a little over 600 students. We have about 25 teachers and paraprofessionals who work with the children on a daily basis. We have a principal, an assistant principal, office staff who handle the day-to-day paperwork business of the school. We have guidance counselors, two of them. We have after-school events, parties, dances, etc. We have sports teams, wrestling, football, soccer, track, cross-country. We also offer a couple of courses for our eighth graders that will allow them to get high school credit for courses they take in eighth grade. We have three computer labs. All of the classrooms are equipped with what we call Promethean boards, which are computerized screens onto which you can project anything from the internet. You can show videos, educational or entertaining. You can interactively work on this large screen with a computerized pen to show students how to do math problems or draw or make maps or point out and circle or highlight areas on maps, etc. So we're a pretty forward-looking school. We have traditional classrooms. We engage in collaborative learning where we have a 60-40 ratio of 60% average or above to 40% special ed students in at least one class in every subject for all three grade levels that we teach. So we're, like I said, we're a medium-sized school. Now, the classroom model says that the teacher basically is at the front of the class telling the class information. They are either taking notes, working problems, asking questions, receiving answers, discussing interpretations of literature, learning about grammar, learning about history, all this, that, and the other. That's the traditional model. The teacher lectures, the students listen, they do interactive type things, they work in groups sometimes, sometimes they work individually. Their progress is measured by testing, etc. My friend Linda has given us a list of what she thinks our public education system should do. And it's a good list. She says, first, good communication skills. Second, reading and good comprehension. Third, math, so you can balance a checkbook and follow a recipe. Fourth, science, that at least one understands a little botany, astronomy, biology, and some of the human body systems. And some chemistry, so the kids blow themselves up or inhale stupid things. Very straightforward, very common sense, and this is what used to be a standard eighth grade education. It used to be that any student managing to go through eight grades would have all of those skills. They would be able to read a newspaper. They would be able to take out a book at the library, a classic, usually something written by, Sir Walter Scott, or Charles Dickens, and understand the vocabulary, the sentence structure, the historical context, etc. Their math skills would allow them to do all four mathematical operations with fractions, decimals, percents, whole numbers. They would have an understanding of how to do word problems. They would be able to understand what an equation is. They would know the purpose for addition, subtraction, multiplication, and division. They would be able to balance a checkbook. They would be able to increase a recipe that served four to serve eight, or decrease a recipe that served six to serve three. They would have an understanding of basic civics, what the Constitution is. My friend Linda and I are channeling each other here. She just put that in the chat room. They would understand American history, know about the Founding Fathers, understand the progress that we have made over our 200-plus years of existence, the mistakes we've made, what we did to correct them. They would have some understanding of world history, the roots of our democracy, the civilizations that preceded us, the ways in which their societies and their governments made their citizens' lives good, bad, indifferent, or absolutely hell. An understanding of science. So basic chemistry, the idea that you don't mix ammonia and bleach, because if you do, you will kill yourself by breathing in chlorine gas. That you do not generally take a bucket full of gasoline, pour it on the floor, and then light it to clean the kitchen floor. Understanding of the periodic table of elements, understanding what an atom is, understanding enough biology to understand the anatomy of the human body, the classification of living things, the effects of various foods, medications, etc. on your body, and why some things are better for you to digest than others, would be understanding of the English language so that you could communicate clearly to anyone at any level, make sense, be reasonably grammatically correct, understand how to write your language in complete sentences, understand what your language was made up of, the basic grammar, what nouns and verbs are, how to diagram a sentence so you can see what the parts do. And like Linda says in that basic chemistry, don't take Valium and vodka together. The understanding of if you had the aptitude, the understandings of the basics of pre-algebra, and understanding geography, knowing what latitude and longitude are, being able to read a map, understanding the compass rows, being able to know the states in the nation and their capitals, to know that Chicago is in Illinois, Miami is in Florida, Boston is in Massachusetts, etc. The basic education that my grandmother got, who only went through eighth grade in school. She was a very bright lady. Read voraciously. Read out loud to me from the time I was 2 months old. Understood and enjoyed poetry. Talk about events of the day. Was a great storyteller. All of these things. These are what public education was originally intended to be by our founding fathers. They wanted the common man, and not just the wealthy, to be literate and aware. They wanted an understanding of our history, of reading and communicating in the English language, of practical, commercial, and personal mathematics. Geography, the history of the world and how it relates to events of today. The understanding of our government and how it works and what our rights and responsibilities are under our Constitution, how our government is set up so that there are balances, so that no one group can take power and take away the freedoms that were granted to us by God and are supposed to be protected by the Constitution. My friend Jomer said if he'd known one day there would be internet and chat rooms, he might have stayed awake more often in grammar class. But at the time, he figured there was no need to know that stuff. And you're not alone. Because I have a whole bunch of students that I deal with on a daily basis who have absolutely no clue that it matters that you spell something right. Basic education. Linda's list is almost exactly the same as mine. What I would like to see happen is to have our entire system scrapped and started over from the ground up so that what we did for every child in this nation was offer them the opportunity to learn all of those things up to roughly eighth grade level and gave them until they were 16 to do it. And then at 16, if they had mastered all of those areas, they would receive a certificate of proficiency that would indicate to their potential employers in the workforce that they could read and write their own language, they were reasonably competent in math, so that if the cash register broke down, they could accept $20 for a $15.47 purchase and return $4.53 in change and understand that that was correct. Be able to read the manual to a new piece of software, or to understand an article in a newspaper that described a new innovation that was going to go into their company, to be able to educate themselves outside of the academics, the academic institutions, within their job, or to take a new one, and not assume that somebody would give it to them simply because they showed up every day and didn't kill anybody in the workplace. If we had a standard 1956 eighth grade education as far as the basics of English, grammar, mathematics, etc., and computer literacy, which is absolutely necessary in the workforce and in higher levels of academia today, we would be creating a citizenry who could make their own way economically, socially, intellectually, and politically. At that 16-year-old certificate of proficiency point, they then would have the opportunity to choose to or not to attend an institution of higher learning where they could continue in a more narrow field. Mathematics, for example, going farther than algebra, geometry, and trig, or doing that in a secondary school, a four-year high school, if you will, that would not be mandatory, but would be voluntary and an opportunity. Then, after that opportunity was taken and successfully achieved, would be the baccalaureate level, the college level, if you will, the working toward a bachelor's degree in a 2, 3, or 4-year program, further narrowing and specializing in a field they were interested in. There would also be, after that certificate of proficiency, in addition to the academic secondary school that would be basically preparing you for college or university, there would be a vocational secondary school that would give you, at least in its first 2 years, the opportunity to sample and do hands-on in several different professions that do not necessarily require an academic degree. Electricians, pipe fitters, jewelry work, automotive repair, heating and air conditioning repair, construction skills, the opportunity to learn to operate heavy machinery, because at 16 you can get a driver's license and you can get a CDL. A real vocational opportunity instead of a dumping ground for kids who can't learn in the traditional way, and you've got to get out of the way before they beat everybody in high school. which is what our current vocational education is. And instead of having a president who says everybody should go to college, we would, with love, have a president who said everybody should have a chance to learn as much as they're capable of and fly as high as their wings will take them. It is not necessary, ladies and gentlemen, for a public education system to guarantee anybody anything except opportunity. There is no guarantee that I am going to be able to learn mathematics as quickly and as well as, say, my father could. I didn't. I mastered it, yes, but it bored me silly, and the last thing on earth I wanted to be was an engineer, mathematician, physicist, or scientist of any kind. I passed the courses because I needed the basic understanding because I wanted to attend a university. At the time that I was in high school, my ambition was to become an English teacher. It got rather sidetracked later on, but strangely enough, that's kind of what I wound up doing anyhow. Looks like I've got a caller, and I think it's my friend Linda. Hang on, we'll lose the line. Hello. Hello.
Okay, now you can hear me.
Okay, yeah, now I can hear you, Linda. How are you, darling?
Fine, very good. We have a great day today. It's not as hot as yesterday. It's really pleasant. This is quite a topic because, as you know, I mean, you're right in the thick of it. It's a mess. This education system is just, it's a hot mess. I've never seen anything like it.
It is a horrendous hellhole, to be blunt and honest about it. Today, for example, okay, we lost our Spanish teacher who does double duty. She taught Spanish 1, 2, and 3 in the high school, Spanish for high school credit to our graders. She resigned three months ago. Meanwhile, we've been unable to find someone to replace her, so one of the other paraprofessionals and I, both of us who are fluent in Spanish, have been teaching the class. Because it is a class for high school credit, we cannot continue to do so without a certified teacher, because neither the gentleman who's doing it or I have a certificate, a teaching certificate. I don't want one because I have no desire to classroom teach. My forte, my skills, my best method is teaching small group or one-on-one. That's what I've done for years and years and years, and that's what I do in my ISS room. I fill in whenever I'm needed, when somebody's out with a Friday flu or we don't have a sub or whatever, and I can teach any one of the core courses in middle school. I went through middle school. God help me if I couldn't teach them. But this today, well, actually for the last 2 weeks, we have our 8th graders and 6th graders and 7th graders have a strange schedule for their elective courses. They have their four core courses, science, mathematics, social studies, and English, at set periods during the day. And then they have about an hour and a half of the school day that is set aside for their elective courses and for physical education. And the way it works in our school is that they do electives on either even days and phys ed on odd or the reverse. So they get their electives once a week, their PE once a week, and sometimes twice for one of them, depending how it works out with the number of days of the month. Well, with two Spanish classes, 8th grade, each one of them has about 25 to 30 students in it. And of those 25 to 30 students in each class, there are about 6 in each class who actually are paying attention and learning anything. The 20-some have absolutely no clue that when you are learning a foreign language, you are supposed to memorize things. They do not understand this. They do not understand that they are supposed to remember that the conjugation of cantar, which is to sing, is yo canto, tú cantas, él canta, nosotros cantamos, ustedes cantan, vosotros cantáis, ellos cantan. They have no clue that they have to memorize that.
Well, you had to do that if you were taught English correctly as well. It's just their language is a little bit more reversed than ours, yes.
And the problem that we have is the parameters for permitting an 8th grade student to take this high school level course is their steps of learning score in English.
Right.
Okay.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, it is not a qualification to take a foreign language. All that says is that you can read your own language and comprehend well enough to make the right multiple choice guess.
Oh, my heavens.
Yes, ma'am. So, you know.
When you go in, like you say, if you were the one in charge, that mm-hmm. if it was set up correctly, then you could branch off after your first, say, 11 to 12 years of schooling.
Yes.
Even the 8 or 9, if it was done correctly, one could go to either vocational or specialization or the 2-year college. Or if one wants to be somebody in science and be a great surgeon, then they would have to go way further.
Way further,
Even in the vocational schools, an auto mechanic has to be able to read something or even deep.
And have some understanding of spatial geometry. They also have to be able to understand the scientific units, metric system, because they won't just be working on cars that use English measure for wrenches and bolts, etc. There are a lot of European and Asian mm-hmm. vehicles that they would need to work on that measure things in metrics. So they have to have an understanding of basic mathematics as applies to measurement, doing regular standard multiplication, division, addition, and subtraction, and they have to be able to add 2 + 3 without a calculator and come up with 5. You'd be amazed.
I know.
The number of I asked them what 2 + 3 is, Linda, they pull their calculators out.
Oh, my God. Oh, that's awful.
Ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
Oh, that's really bad.
Have you ever been in a grocery store when the automatic figure of change on the cash register goes out?
Oh, yes.
Oh, my God. There's a nightmare.
Oh, it is. It's very, very sad.
Uh-huh.
And, when you talk about a decent workforce, and we talked a little bit about this on the late part of my show yesterday, unbelievable, the work ethic that's not there and what built this country, the incredible hard labor, and nobody complained, and they just did it. It was, my Lord, they built the railroads. They had, back in the day, everybody did something, they were skilled craftsmanship, which has gone out the window. God bless Glenn Beck, he's made the new one, 1791 denim, and they're making the jeans. Oh, I'm sure you've seen some of that, but it's amazing, which I applaud him for. And every vocation, anything you go to do, whether you go get your car smoked or you need to go have some specialized meat cut at your market, someone has to be skilled and trained in that particular arena.
Exactly.
Or if you want to go to a restaurant and have something cooked that is delectable, you must have a chef who knows what they're doing.
Exactly. I married one of those. If you give the students a chance in secondary education, instead of steering everybody in algebra, geometry, trigonometry, world history, et cetera, in secondary education, give them a good basic understanding of geography, world history, American history, the English language, mathematics, basic science, biology, et cetera, in the first 8 years, and let them do it until they're 16. Because if they get that, they can go out in the workforce and they can learn on the job. They're not walking in incapable of counting up to 10 without using their fingers. They're walking in with some skills, and they're teachable because they've got in the habit of learning. If they don't want to enter the workforce, if they hunger for more, make the opportunity available for them to do it, but not blanket opportunity. Don't send a kid who is never going to be able to read past fourth grade level to college because you think if he goes there and sits there for 4 years with 6 people to lead him through it, he's going to be CEO of a company when he's done.
That's crazy.
I worked with an autistic kid whose mother was an idiot. She kept telling this child, and believe me, you've heard me speak of him before. His processing speed was to the point that when he was in a standard classroom, even a collaborative classroom, he could not keep up with the pace of spoken English by the teacher who was teaching to a class that was 60% average and 40% special ed. He couldn't focus and understand what she said long enough to get 2 sentences in his head. He was still thinking about the first 3 words, and this kid's mother was telling him, sure, you need to go to college.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, wow.
It's insane, Linda. It is insane. They have taken the idea, the change, the really horrible change, mm-hmm. began with the classification of learning disabilities as fitting under the Americans with Disabilities Act, and as it pertains to education, the concept of the free appropriate publication, public education for all children, whether they had the ability to learn anything or not, that they were entitled to go to public school. Today, I was three different people because we had a lot of people out. Beginning of the day, I was a paraprofessional working with in a collaborative class in reading. Well, actually, mm-hmm. it was a self-contained class in reading for students who were learning disabled or behaviorally challenged. Then I taught Spanish for an hour and a half. Then I was another professional who was in the class of the children the classification was EMR, Educational Mentally Retarded. I think there's a new classification and a new way of saying it. But these children are never going to be able to properly live independently in their entire lives. Their ability to understand, reason, et cetera, make good choices based on observation and thinking about them just isn't there and never will be. And yet they are entitled to be educated in public school.
Unbelievable.
One of them, they were both in a collaborative 7th grade history class that is discussing the Westward Movement. And they had the class assignment was to do a two-sided sheet of paper with about 10 terms from the unit, ranging from the Homestead Act, Transcontinental Railroad, the Gold Rush, Chief Joseph, Sitting Bull, Wounded Knee, so on and so forth. And what they were supposed to do was to write a definition of the term, then use it in a sentence, and then draw a picture that would help them remember it. Well, these two didn't have to do the first two parts. They had to draw a picture. Well, one of them had no clue what everything meant, so he drew stick figures and circles and funny-looking crosshatches. And when I asked him what it meant, he said, I don't know.
That's so sad.
Yeah, it is. And they're sweet kids, most of them. I mean, one of them is really. But anyhow, these children are not getting anything.
No.
They are getting absolutely nothing. And the classroom where they normally are has one special education teacher and three paraprofessional aides for six kids. Four adults monitoring a classroom with six children.
Good heavens.
Yes, ma'am.
Wow.
Yes,
no wonder
ma'am.
Everything's skyrocketing.
Yes, and that's exactly correct. And as much compassion as I feel, and as much as I bend over backwards to explain and help these kids, because I can't help it, I'm a teacher. I was born to be one.
Mm-hmm.
I will teach anything that can talk, and a great many things that can't. But I know that these kids are being sold a lie, as their
That's
parents
true.
Are being sold a lie. If it makes
That's
parents feel good that their kid's in public school and has gym with boys and girls who do eventually become independent adults,
mm-hmm.
if that's what makes them happy, fine. But is it at my expense as a taxpayer?
Well, yeah, exactly. And the other item is, you know, at the expense of the kid, because if they're not getting anything worthwhile out of it, what's the exercise about?
Exactly.
I mean,
what learning is going on? What they're there to learn, supposedly, is something called life skills. Like, remember you put on their clothes right side out instead of inside out, and they change after gym? We sent that little girl in the class back to change clothes again because she put everything inside out.
Oh, dear. Yeah.
Yeah. This is what I was talking about earlier, about public schools being all things to all children. Babysitters, parents, diaper changers, medical professionals, psychiatrists, spiritual counselors, political, ideological programmers, you name it. The whole thrust of what public education was supposed to have been, what the founders envisioned it as, was that golden opportunity. They knew, because many of them were self-made men. Many of them were self-educated men. They didn't get a free education. They worked their delicate little rear ends off to get it.
Yep.
Those that came from wealthy families, like Jefferson and Washington, who had tutors, who were able to go to William and Mary or Harvard or whatever, okay, had somebody who could pay the fees, or were very, very bright and got a scholarship, or apprenticed themselves to someone and learned with books and time, they wanted every single American citizen to have the opportunity to learn so they could be self-governing as individuals and as a nation. We don't have that purpose anymore in our public schools. It's gone.
Well, no. Yeah, because if you don't, if you weed out the self-education, if you weed out the self-determination and the work ethic, then you can control them better, especially if they're stupid and they need a damn calculator to do 2 plus 3. This is, and I think some of it's intended, some of it's unintended by incompetence in our, because it has devolved into this leviathan of the government doing everything. This is statism at its worst, and this is the result.
And, you know, I was looking at what Jomer said about, you know, going to a 7-Eleven and get a coffee and a roll, and then it comes to $2.18, and you give them $25 and tell them you want the balance and gas and what it is, and they look at you like you're crazy, and when they actually add it up, you did figure it out in your head, you know. And they, I don't know whether you heard anything about it. It was on the Blaze, and I have heard absolutely nothing on our local television, by the way. The incident of the teacher in the Chesapeake school.
Which one? Because it could be. I just read something.
A woman named Tara Harris. A woman named Tara Harris, who a mother of a child in her classroom has filed a police report. The teacher injured her daughter by grabbing the child's arm and trying to force her into the correct position to make an Islamic hand signal. And the child's hand apparently caught on the spiral wire on her binder in her desk, and she was bleeding. And the mother said that this teacher not only has been praying 5 times a day publicly in front of the children, she has also been campaigning for our current president. And she has been teaching the principles of Islam in English and math class for the past 2 weeks.
Did they get rid of her?
She has been suspended pending an investigation. A warrant was served. She was she's under a summons to appear in court for I don't know whether it's a felony or a misdemeanor, but injuring, you know, some kind of you know, not necessarily assault and battery, but something in the case of injuring a child, whatever, child endangerment, something like that. And they, these people couldn't get any kind of response from Chesapeake schools. And, of course, they just had a scandal over, you know, another Chesapeake school principal, you know, fooling around in all sorts of fancy ways. But I have heard absolutely nothing on local news about it.
No, you won't hear it. No.
And I have heard the ACLU up in arms about how dare she bring church and state together in our public schools.
Yeah, that was my next question. What happened to the old Holy Land Alliance? Yeah.
Exactly. And I am not an advocate of religious training in public school. Religious training is the option and the choice and the responsibility of parents, not school teachers.
I mean, there's no, because it would be the same, you know, it's like, it would be like the president preaching his own theology from his podium. And, you know, that's your theocracy, and we can't have that.
And we are not a theocracy. We are a representative democracy. We do not put religion on an equal par, any one religion on an equal par with the Constitution. Our founding fathers understood that you cannot establish a state religion because they came from places that had one.
They didn't want that here.
Exactly. Because the minute you start putting one religion on top, then you start saying, oh, well, wait a minute, you don't go to my church, you don't get to vote, you don't get to own property.
Exactly.
And believe me, those happy little pilgrims, that's exactly what they did.
Mm-hmm.
They were all for religious freedom for them, but not anybody else.
Well, the first ones that, yeah, the first ones that came over were fleeing religious persecution on a little ship.
They were. But when they got here, they set up the same kind of persecution to anybody who didn't hold their particular interpretation of biblical Christianity. If you were not in the church every Sunday morning for 7.5 hours with a short break for lunch, you were in the stocks, you paid a fine, they confiscated your property. So, you know, religious freedom has to be literally religious freedom, not religious freedom for me, and you have to agree with me. Teaching of spiritual matters, other than in a historical context, is not a part of American public education and should not be. That is for the parents to teach their children. You raise your children in whatever belief system you believe to be the right one that fulfills you spiritually, that gives you and your family the moral and ethical guidelines they need to be responsible, decent human beings. And almost every religion on earth, including Islam, unfortunately, has tenets that do that. But every single one of them inevitably comes to the God likes me best tense. And then starts assuming that because I'm the one true way, God told me to go kill you unless you decide to follow what I tell you to do. And Christianity did it with the Crusades. Islam is doing it currently. About the only religious belief system that's never done that is Buddhism. And Buddhism basically says your whole purpose in life is to give up desire and let them kill you, and hopefully you'll be reborn in a higher state later. So
I don't like
that one. Well, and that's the whole point that the Founding Fathers understood. They understood that we are not clones. We do not seek God in the same way. We do not touch God in the same way. We do not even accept God or his existence in the same way, or hers, or theirs, or its. Religion is something that you learn within your family circle. What you learn in school...
What happened in Chesapeake, if it had been me, I think I'd have been down there with a pitchfork.
I think a lot of people would. You ought to read some of the comments on the article on the Blaze. There were a lot of people who were, you know, getting ready to get out the rope and find a nearest tree, which really is not
not a
good solution to the problem. But our founding fathers understood this. They were very wise men in the best sense of the word. They understood that spirituality, religion, a belief in something, is an important aspect of the human being. And it is. But when you place one particular belief above another and hook it to government, you open the door for God told me I can kill you because you don't go to the same church I do.
Exactly.
And that is not what we want our children taught. And unfortunately, too many people have that underlying bias. They don't sometimes even realize they have it. The idea of holy war is not exclusive to Islam.
Oh, no, absolutely not.
At all.
Well, that's education, been proven.
Yeah, public education needs to acknowledge that, yes, spiritual learnings and spiritual teachings are part of being a human being. But we are not here to discuss or compare or convert anybody to any particular religious teaching. We are here to teach you academic skills and to also teach you the meaning of the social contract, how to live in a society so that everyone's rights are protected, everyone's individuality is respected, but society and in general is safe from those who would dismantle it by harming one another in the name of anything.
Yes.
At all.
And just mayhem and anarchy, correct. Yeah, you don't want those.
And we need, if you will, the libertarian viewpoint that says, to quote Jefferson, so long as it doesn't pick my pocket or break my arm, I don't care what you do.
Exactly. And that, a little more of that would go a long way.
It certainly would.
Boy.
I really enjoyed Wilkow's interview with Gary Johnson, the libertarian candidate, last night on GBTV on Channel 212 on Dish Network.
I'm going to have to check that one out because I didn't see that one yet.
It was very, very good. I like 99% of the libertarian viewpoint. I am not a party person. I am not a group person. I never have been. I'm a rugged individualist. I'm a little crazy. Yeah, obviously, I have to be, otherwise I wouldn't have stayed in education as long as I have. But I do think like a libertarian. I understand fundamentally that we are unique individuals. And I understand that if we are going to educate ourselves and our children, we have to be aware of that fact. Mm-hmm. We have to take into consideration that people do not all learn in the same way. But we cannot use that as a reason to screw up the traditional classroom situation. If we want to meet that goal, we are going to have to scrap traditional classroom, and we're going to have to start looking at places like Carpe Diem, where every student has his or her computer station. The teachers are roving. They are monitoring the child's progress all the time on the technology we have available. They're right there to answer a question, to help them over a hump. If they're busy with one student, there should be access through Skype, the computer, to someone live who is picking up the phones and can help walk them through that. Or they can go back and redo the software. The software has to be reasonable in the sense of measuring the student's progress so that they can't just guess and get through things.
Sure.
Has to be able to show that they've understood a concept. It can be done, like that good old $6 million lead-in. We have technology. We can rebuild him. Well, doggone it, we have the technology. We can rebuild our school system.
And oh, exactly.
Of what a public education should be is almost identical to mine, Linda. And I think if you went out there and you polled every single citizen in this country who is able to communicate in the English language, every doggone one of them would probably say, yeah, this is what I want my kids to learn.
Exactly. And you know, there's when you talk about, say, through age 16, then you could always, whatever other things you can do on your own, if you've gotten that far, then you should be able to teach yourself anything that you want. And perhaps some of the elective-type schools or whatever could include the fine arts or literature or fine writing or whatever. Precursor to medical school or lawyer, whatever.
Exactly. If you've got the skills to read and comprehend at eighth grade level, then you can go read things, increase your vocabulary, and read at even higher levels. If you don't have the comprehension skills of an eighth grade, you are eternally doomed to reading graphic novels and maybe being able to decipher the picture in the back of a box of cake mix.
Yes, and you won't be able to bake a cake either.
No, because you won't be able to figure out numbers on the thermostat on the stove.
Oh, God. Absolutely. Sad.
Just something really good in the chat room, and I want to repeat it for those out there listening. He said, I went to college because I thought I wanted a career. Turns out what I wanted was a paycheck. That is the motivation that our kids are being given to go to higher education. A paycheck.
Right.
They are told, because statistically those with a higher education make more money, they are told that the higher education, just being there, guarantees you more money. It doesn't if you don't learn what you're there to be taught.
Exactly.
Sitting in a college for 4 years majoring in women's studies or elementary basket weaving is not going to give you a $50,000 a year job when you come out.
You're going to be lucky to work at Walmart.
Yeah, and managing to scrape through a university education with a C average is not going to make you CEO of whatever.
It's not
automatic that cause you have that piece of paper that says you managed to scrape through 4 years of college and get an AB or BS degree. That doesn't prove that you actually know anything. I went to college with women. I swear, Linda, there was one young lady who lived in my dormitory when I went to the University of Georgia. That's where I graduated from.
Mm-hmm.
She was a junior, and she was an elementary education major. Believe me, L-Ed majors were the laughingstock of any educated woman, college woman, in my day, because what they were after was an MRS degree. They had no desire to actually learn anything. But anyway, I'm sure you've heard of C.S. Lewis's Chronicles of Narnia, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe?
Yeah.
Yes. You know that it's basically an allegory, Christian allegory. Right. They were in her elementary education reading and literature class for children. They were reading The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. She didn't understand it.
Wow.
Yeah. And this woman was going to be turned loose to teach elementary school.
Oh, great. Oh, that'll work out well.
She probably would have had a great deal of difficulty explaining Curious George to a 4-year-old. since then.
Yeah.
One of the reasons that in my college career, as much as I wanted to be an English teacher, and I did, I really wanted to do that. The reason I didn't major in education was because I saw what a college degree in education consisted of. Mm-hmm. It consisted of how to make little kiddies feel good about themselves and play in the classroom.
Oh, God.
It was not about teaching the teacher enough so that she or he could answer questions. It was about lesson plan creation, presenting material visually, adapting to different learning styles.
Yep.
It was methodology and not actual knowledge. You need both. It's another example of the progressive
mindset.
Are so focused on everybody should be exactly alike and equal and have equal stuff, and so focused on what they see as social injustice that they can't balance anything. The whole idea of sight reading as the new way to teach, if you just immerse them in words, sooner or later they'll read. That came out in the 70s. Oh, yeah, in 80s. Oh, my God, yes. We went through.
Oh, they were trying to push that on my parents when I was 2 or 3 years old.
Oh, believe me, they've been trying to do that since the 50s. And it's absurd. You have to, the English language is screwy because it has so many bits
variables.
And pieces about every linguistic family that has ever existed in the history of man.
I know.
And, you know, its basic structure is partly Anglo-Saxon and Germanic with infusions of Romance languages because of the Norman conquest. Then you get all the Indian, both the East Indian and Native American words that got into the language. You get the Spanish and other types of words that came into American English because we were living cheek by jowl on the same continent with the Spanish in the Southwest and in Florida and so on. And you've got a whole set of things that English spelling is horrible. We have about 28 sounds in our language, and any one of them can be spelled anywhere from 1 to 6 different ways. And you have to memorize all of the exceptions. There are more exceptions than there are rules.
Exactly.
So, you know, the absurdity of telling a parents that, oh, well, if we just read at them sooner or later and they just look at all these words, they'll memorize all the words and they won't have to sound anything out.
God.
Have you memorized all the words in the Oxford Dictionary of the English Language? I haven't.
Me either. I was taught phonetically by my parents at home. By the time I was 4, I could read. And then I got better each year. So as you grow, and your mind grows, and your, you know, physiological, everything else grows with you, your emotions, et cetera. And so you're, you know, because that's how the human mind starts. You know, it takes almost 2 years to really formulate a whole sentence. That's why kids take so long to start speaking, because they know they can't do it. It's just not, the synapse isn't complete. It's just
I was apparently very weird because according to family, I was speaking in complete sentences when I was a year old. But you see, and I haven't shut up since. So
I think that's okay with
a twist somewhere. But Rob said in the chat room that he wished he could have gone to college because he enjoyed learnings, but he had college grads decking for him on tugboats. And that's quite true.
Right.
A college education is a wonderful thing. I would not trade mine for anything in the world.
Mm-hmm.
I took a lot of courses that I really don't remember a great deal of, and I took them only because they were required. I had to have so many hours, so many things. But even in some of the ones that I don't remember a lot of, I learned something. And if nothing else, it taught me the discipline that even if I didn't like the stuff, I still had to learn it. And even if I didn't like the professor, it didn't mean I didn't learn from it. And that's another thing that our kids are not understanding. This whole idea that the teacher is your friend is garbage. That's not what a teacher is there to be. A teacher is there to teach you, not to be your buddy, not to wipe your butt.
Even if you didn't particularly care for the course, the bits and pieces that stuck with you, it's never wasted. You'll always pull it out
and use it. For instance, I didn't pay a lot of attention in geology. It was the most boring thing I ever took in my life. The only thing I remember about it is there was this creepy little lab assistant who couldn't wait to take me out and teach me how to drive, and I kept trying to, you know, get him to leave me alone. But some of the things that I learned, like the basic qualifications of rocks, sedimentary, igneous, etc., metamorphic, the understanding of how they were layered and the basic geological understanding would tell you that, say, there might be a pocket of natural gas or oil. I remember stuff like that. And it
Great.
Now. And, you know, it's there in my head.
It, so do you think... Do you think the professor wanted to teach you to drive from the back seat?
I'm sure of it. He had arms long enough, trust me. It kind of came down to his ankles, you know.
One of those, okay.
Yeah, well, I didn't look bad in those days, so I guess that kind of explains it. But anyhow, I wouldn't trade my higher education for anything. Either the 4 years in undergraduate or my 2.5 years getting my master's. And my master's has absolutely no commercial value whatsoever. I didn't study it for that reason. I studied it because I was passionately interested in, and still am interested in, transpersonal psychology and transpersonal studies. It fascinates me. The sociological and historical implications of comparative theology, I think that is amazingly interesting. I love it. I don't care if I ever make a dime out of it. It was for me, you know? It was for me to open my horizons.
It's you know, when my dad taught, and he was in high school for his 28 years, so he had kids who, you know how they can be at that age, but a little bit more cognitive than, say, the younger ones sometimes, and they can sit still for longer periods of time usually.
Yeah,
but most of them. He did bring his higher education into his skill set, and probably, you know, just because he loved what he learned and he wanted to pass it on in ways that he could, because he taught English and he did teach reading and he taught drama because he loved the theater. And so all of these things that he had, you know, he helped the other kids who were the higher, who could absorb it and do further things with it, creative writing. So it was really wonderful to have that the Quill Club. So he brought those to them. So it was wonderful.
Well, any teacher does. When you're an English teacher, for example, if you're teaching Romeo and Juliet or Julius Caesar or Macbeth, you also have to have some understanding of the mores and the lifestyles of the Elizabethan era. You also have to understand the conflict between Spain and England at that time, both fighting for dominance of the ocean, because that was the key to trade and prosperity. So everything you learn, no matter what subject you teach, the other areas in which maybe you don't have a lot of expertise, they do come in. If you're teaching science and your kids have to write out the steps in an experiment, they have to be able to write in English coherently enough and clearly and grammatically enough so that you can tell what it is they're experimenting on, what's the control group, what's the dependent variable, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You have to understand the words so you can explain them in their scientific context. If you're teaching math, you have to be able to read and comprehend to get your kids to understand how to derive an equation for a word problem. They have to learn the mathematical language of algebra. They have to learn what an exponent is, what an equation is, what an inequality is. They communicate not only in numbers, but in words. If you're teaching history, you have to have some familiarity with literature, because many of the great movements that changed the historical context, like our revolution, were based on writings of people like John Locke.
Oh, sure. And back further to Cicero.
Exactly. And the polemics, and even Plato's Republic and his happy, you know, ant colony, which was, you know, the idea of what a democratic society or a republican society would be, that it was supposed to be some form of meritocracy so that the cream would rise. Everything you learn in life, whether you learn it in school or you learn it on the job or you learn it from reading a book, watching TV, playing on the internet, has potential value. And this is what, this is the ethos, the mantra, the underlying raison d'etre that's supposed to be part of our public education, that knowledge is power, like the KIPP schools in California that are spread out all over the West now. And that's what it stands for, knowledge is power. That when you learn and understand how to learn, there is nothing that can stop you.
Right.
And learning isn't, I'll you an A because you spelled your name right twice in a row. Learning is putting knowledge in your head and keeping it there. Learning is when you are taking a course in how to speak Spanish, you remember that yo means I. You don't get to take the book with you when you take the exam.
There's a lot to be said for retention, isn't there?
Oh, my God, yes. And there's another one. Scrap the idea of social promotion. I don't really give a rat's tail about somebody's self-esteem when you're giving them self-esteem based on a flat-out lie. That's not self-esteem.
Absolutely.
That's them fill of goods. That's giving them poison fruit to eat. It's not about feel good about yourself because you got an A because you smiled at the teacher and didn't act up in class. It's feel good about yourself because you mastered something that was hard for you. Or even if you didn't master it, you gave it your very best shot.
Absolutely. That's where real self-esteem comes from.
Yes,
from
it does.
Accomplishment. From actually doing and trying. And
not
hopefully succeeding.
Not from everybody gets a trophy, everybody gets an A. And believe
that makes my blood boil.
Has filtered right into the classroom to everybody gets an A. I had an education teacher, a friend of mine, and she is a good friend of mine, but bless her heart, she's a liberal.
Oh,
she was working collaborative science class with a general ed teacher. And they had a test. And there was a test for the SPED kids that limited, it was multiple choice tests, and the SPED kids had one of the answers crossed out, so they only had to choose among three instead of four. Well, mistakenly, that form went to the whole class, and the gen ed teacher was understandably annoyed. The regular kids, the kids who weren't SPED, were supposed to have had the actual real test. Well, the special ed teacher said her compensation order, well, just look at it this way. This way, everybody will pass.
Oh, my God.
Yes, ma'am. I heard her say it.
My God. That's crazy.
Yes, ma'am.
Hey, what universe are these people from? I
don't know.
I don't know.
It is, I don't want to go there. I'm not interested.
Exactly.
No. If there's a spaceship,
send them all back.
Sounds fine to me. Let them get on and go home. And we'll stay here and keep this planet.
I know, it's crazy.
But if we truly are going to reform education, we are going to have to actually reform it. Reform. Make it over again. We're going to have to, if we want to educate everybody, at least to some degree of independence and functionality in society, we have the technology, we can do it. But we can't do it. We cling to the traditional classroom and the teachers' unions and tenure and all of the other crap that has encrusted our educational system and made it into a cross between a playground, a nursery, and a, I don't know what to call it, some kind of party where everybody has a good time and you go home and you can't remember what you did.
Oh, great. Well, you know, you have to have the public will to do it. And since we still have some semblance of a republic, at least in this country, you know, when we set out to do something as a group or whatever, we usually do pretty well when we went to the moon, et cetera, whatever we're doing.
Yes.
Now, you just have to get enough people to think like-mindedly and push forward and go for it.
And we have got to take sentimentality and the fake compassion out of it. We have got to stop making the assumption that people who cannot learn, who have major cognitive problems, deserve to be told that they can learn, even if it isn't true. We have got to stop practicing what is called compassion and what is really an insidious and vicious form of creating failure. Rod said something.
Because that's what they're doing.
That learning is gaining knowledge and wisdom is the proper use of knowledge. And he's also saying we've been supposedly reforming our education system for decades, and we need to go backwards because what we've done, we have reformed it. We changed its shape.
Sure.
But we have not changed its shape in the sense of we're still setting it up the same way and trying to make it do something it was never designed to do. It's as if we had taken a rowboat and added lots of bells and whistles and pretty lights and so on and so forth on it, and said, okay, now we have got a transatlantic luxury liner.
And what they also have done is taken a little drill and put a hole in the bottom.
Yep.
Oh, for good measure.
Exactly. And he's right again. Trying to change it by dumping money at it won't work. All money does is increase the pension
bureaucracy.
And the bureaucracy and the paperwork, and make pretty plants and put all kinds of nice, neat technology that nobody ever uses. Nine class days out of ten, the computer labs in our middle school have nobody in them.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Mm-hmm.
That's really sad.
Yeah. We have to pay attention. We have to notice. And we have got to get people to understand that learning doesn't happen automatically by putting a kid in a chair in a room with a teacher.
That's true.
And that is what parents expect. And believe me, I am very pro-teacher in many ways, because I work with some very fine teachers who are as frustrated as I am, as you are, as many parents are, because they are so hemmed in by ridiculous, impossible expectation, paperwork, data-driven measurement nonsense, social engineering crap, that they cannot teach anybody anything.
Oh, God. I don't know how you guys do it.
many people quit after 5 years.
Of course.
It is very, very rare for someone coming out of college with an education degree to stay in the public schools for longer than 5 years.
Do they go to the private schools?
They go to private schools or they go out into business, because they just get burned out. They get so frustrated that they say, the hell with this, I'm going to go do something where I'm not wasting my time 7.5 hours a day, or in many cases, 10 hours a day, because of all the paperwork and tracking and all the other stuff and all the meetings and all the IEPs and all the other things they have to do to teach the whole thing.
Mm.
Well, that is not the function of public education. It is not intended to teach the whole child. It's not intended to be a parent.
Exactly. No, you're right. Back in the day, those who really were education-oriented, like my folks, made sure we had a lot of skills before we even walked into a classroom, and that's why I hated kindergarten, because I could do what they wanted me to do there at home. And I thought, they're not teaching me anything. I was crying my first day home. I said, they're not teaching me anything.
Yeah. I was bored silly in there, and I used to, go off in a corner and read a book during nap time. I didn't actually read in kindergarten. I was able to start, my goal was to be able to read the Sunday comics to myself, and I managed that the third month in first grade. So from that point on, the rest of first grade was, pretty much boring. But I'm not saying that everybody learns at the same pace. They don't. That's why the traditional system is not going to work. We have, for the first time in the history of mankind, we actually have something that will allow people to learn at their own pace and learn well.
Yep.
But we're not using it effectively. We're using it as a pretty bauble to hang on the educational Christmas tree and say, look at all this pretty stuff we got in here. We're still dressing up the rowboat and calling it the Queen Elizabeth. It's a daggone rowboat, and that's what it was intended to be. It's not the luxury liner. It's the rowboat that gets you from your island to the dock in the city, where you can then get on the luxury liner if you've managed to stay afloat in the cotton picking rowboat.
Exactly. I know, because they keep trying to – they're doing that cognitive dissonance thing. They keep doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. It's just unbelievable. And the throwing of the money, and the public sector unions, I think, have overstepped their bounds and outlived any usefulness they may have had.
Mm-hmm. It's what really gets me, and I say this so often, and I know I'm preaching to the choir when I say it to you, but I'm hoping somebody out there listening, if there are folks listening, and I hope there are, is going to get, a spark to their tinder. And they're maybe going to realize that if you want somebody to actually learn, you have to make it important to them to do so. And you
right.
don't do that by giving them a grade, patting them on the head, wiping their tears, having kumbaya discussions about bullying, worrying about their religious education or their sex lives or any of the other stuff. What you're supposed to be there for is to give them academic skills. That's what teachers do. They aren't mommy. They are not daddy. They are not grandma. They are not your priest, your minister, your rabbi, your imam, your sensei. They are the teacher of academic skills
right.
that will get you to the point where you can become a lifelong learner.
And you can be self-sufficient in the world.
Yes.
Because
yes.
it's not a fun place out there when you're 18,
no, it is
believe
not.
Me. I learned that the hard way.
Don't we all? If we live long
yeah.
enough, we all learn it. If we don't learn it, we usually don't live.
And
we can't prepare children for the real world if we tell them that the world is going to roll over and play dead at their whim.
Yeah, that's another huge lie. And now the poor employers are saddled with all this coming out of the schools, and then they have to bend over backwards as well, and they can't discriminate mm-hmm. because the kids have tattoos from one end to the other. And
I know
couldn't
it.
Make change of, without the automatic
it.
Register. I know. It's horrible. It's, especially
that,
in California.
That ridiculous, the nonsensical tracking now of disciplinary measures for in-school and out-of-school suspension to track by race to see if African-American children are being fairly placed in ISS or OSS percentage-wise based on their percent of the population.
Mm.
I mean, you know, that somehow or other, you know, everybody puts somebody who's black in ISS simply because they're black.
That's crazy.
No, you put people in ISS or you suspend them from school because they can't behave in a classroom so everybody else can learn. It doesn't matter what ethnic background they have.
Exactly. I'm going to let you wind it up, and I'm going to go back to the chat room, and I want to thank you for taking my call. It was a pleasure.
Oh, it's always a pleasure to talk with you, darling. Thanks for calling
Thanks.
In.
Thanks.
You're
okay,
welcome.
And have a blessed
night, honey.
Day. Thanks.
Blessed be. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we've kind of hashed out all of the things that are wrong with our system. And it's easy to throw bricks and throw rocks. It's easy to point out the bad stuff. It's not easy to fix it. But it doesn't mean it's impossible. One of the reasons that we throw the bricks, one of the reasons that we bash the things that are wrong, is that if we don't take a look at what isn't working, we're not going to try to fix it. And we have to fix it, ladies and gentlemen. This world is not going to stop dead and accommodate to children who are taught that the world belongs to them and they are entitled to anything they want. We cannot continue to ill-educate our children in a dressed-up rowboat called an ocean liner. We have got to redesign the way we teach, the structure of our schools, and we have to have a clear understanding of what the purpose of public education is. It is not intended to be a babysitting service. It is not intended or should not be intended to be an indoctrination center for social or political ideology. It isn't intended to guarantee anyone, merely by attending it, a successful material life. It isn't a place where you go in order to meet your friends, eat lunch, and watch football games. And above all, it is not a place where you are given a grade because the teacher likes you or you didn't kill anybody in the last week and a half. We have to understand what it is we want from public education. What do we want our children to get out of public school? Do we want them to be happy socialist members of the machine? Do we want them to be sure that they can run to anybody and cry on their shoulder when they don't get what they want and somebody will give it to them? Do we want them to be very good at leading a circle of let's all love one another and we won't have war anymore? Do we want them to be very knowledgeable about every form of sexuality on the planet throughout history among humans animals, fish, birds, whatever, and practice them all? What is it that we want a public education to do? I know what I want it to do. I want it to give children the ability to read and comprehend what they read, to do math sufficiently well that they can balance their checkbook, they can make change and count the change they receive when they purchase something, they can understand a contract, a purchase contract, a credit card, an interest rate, how to measure things, liquids, how to measure distance, how to measure mass, that they have a working understanding of the history of their nation, that they understand how our government works and their role in it, a basic understanding of scientific principles and scientific methods, how their bodies work, and how the forces in the universe interact, a basic understanding of where things are in the world, and how to find your way around the map, and then they are equipped to go further. But if they're not equipped with those things, it doesn't matter how much you give them of further education, how much free education you tell them they're entitled to. If they don't have the skills to absorb it, it is a waste of their time and our money. If you want the school to babysit your children and be surrogate parents, then you want to create dependents who will remain that way for their entire lives, who will never be self-reliant, who will never create, who never will innovate, who never will even ask why. Because they are waiting for someone to tell them what to think, what to do, where to go, and how to lead their lives. If you want the schools to be surrogate parents, then you want the schools to teach them everything about being a decent human being, whether it matches with what you believe or not. If you want the schools to be surrogate parents, that means you want the schools to indoctrinate your children into whatever political ideology heads up the government that makes the regulations that control the schools. And when there's a change in administration or a change in the legislatures and new policies are brought down, then you're fine with changing whatever ethics and values and policies have to away from what the old ones did. We have got to recognize that public education was never intended to take the place of parenting. Nor was it intended, in spite of John Dewey, to socialize your children into cogs in the political machine. Public education was intended and should be intended now to give your children the tools they need to be successful people in all areas of life. Not because someone guarantees them success or gives them success or makes them feel good about themselves no matter what they do, but because they have learned how to learn. They have learned that knowledge is worth having, even though you may not see right away its relevance to your life. You will not always be 12, or 14, or 16, or 17. One day you will be a parent. One day you will be wondering what your children are learning when they leave you on that first bus ride to first grade. If we do not have educated citizens, ladies and gentlemen, we will not have America. We cannot be self-governing as a nation if we are not self-governing as individuals. We cannot have the stature in the world of the beacon of freedom if we ourselves give up our freedoms for the illusion of safety, security, and a risk-free life. We cannot continue as a society, as a nation, as a power, if all we do is teach dependency and feel-good philosophies and willingness to stop thinking in order to get something in exchange. If we do not teach our children to get out of the 13-year-old aggressive mindset, thank you, Linda, and use the big head instead of the little one, we will lose our country. We can do it. We need, as a nation, because we are the nation, to take a good, hard look at what we want our children to learn in our public educational institutions. What do we expect of a school? The immigrants who came to this nation in the 19th and early 20th century loved American education because it gave their children the chance to be Americans, not Spanish Americans, Polish Americans, Ukrainian Americans, Italian Americans, French Americans, German Americans, but Americans. It gave them the opportunity to learn the English language, read books, understand science, learn about music and art, chemistry, biology, mathematics, history. And the places that they came from, their children would have been doomed to ignorance. But not here. Here, their children could rise as high as their abilities and skills would take them because they could get an education. Not a guaranteed diploma, or everybody gets an A, or everybody gets a trophy, but the opportunity to learn from people who knew more than they did and who were willing and eager to share it with them. That's what teachers do. That's what the best teachers love to do. The only thing of value that I have to give is what I know and how I treat others. That is why I teach. That is why every good teacher you have ever met or heard of in your life teaches. Not to socialize somebody, not to change their diapers or pat them on the head or make them feel good, but to give them knowledge and the means and tools to acquire more, and the freedom to learn to use that knowledge wisely. That is what our public education system is supposed to be about. We can change it. We can reform it. We have the technology. We can rebuild it. But it's going to take a very great change in what we think of as the traditional method of teaching kids. And it's going to take brave teachers who are willing to step away from the idea of tenure and pensions and unions buying votes to increase tenure and increase pensions and increase tuition in colleges for professors who are getting paid because student loans are cheap, until you have to repay them. We have got to start recognizing that education is not a guarantee of learning. It is an opportunity to learn. And as parents and grandparents and aunts and uncles and responsible adults, we have to teach our kids that their job is to learn. And they have to put as much effort toward that job as you and I do toward ours. And that if you don't put forth effort, you're not going to learn. It doesn't happen by magic. It doesn't happen because the teacher likes you or doesn't like you. It happens because your eyes and your ears are open in class and your mouth is shut. unless you are asking a question about something you don't understand. We have to stop looking at our schools as an alternative to teaching our kids everything. They aren't an alternative to parenthood. They are an opportunity for parents to set their children on a road to self-sufficiency, independence, knowledge, and success. But parents still have to be there. They still have to teach the ethics, the morality, the spiritual values that they believe in. And they have to be involved in education, not to demand their child special privileges, not to demand that their child get an A, not to demand that their child go to college when they can't add 2 and 2 and come up with 4 twice in a row, but to demand that their child be given the chance to learn what they can and not be lied to about their success, not be mistreated, not be vilified, not be embarrassed, not be made to feel bad. I am not saying that. But allowed to fail if that failure is because the child has not put forth enough effort. Parents who demand that their children be passed when the children do no homework, do not study for tests, act up in class, ignore the teacher, are bad parents. Yes, they are. Because they are teaching their child that that child doesn't ever have to give anything, effort, or of themselves to get what they want. They are teaching that child that all they have to do is act like a jerk and somebody will give them what they want just to shut them up. I hope that nobody out there listening tonight is that kind of parent. I don't believe that you are. I believe that if you're listening to this show, you're the kind of parent who believes that the very best thing you can give your children is the chance to succeed in even greater ways than you did. And one of the ways you do that is by encouraging and helping them to understand that knowledge and learning are important things and that they take effort to achieve. I want to thank everybody out there in Blog Talk Land for listening in tonight, and my friends and Patriot family who dropped by the chat room, Jomer and Rod Luke and my friend Linda. And I'd like to wish all of you the very best in the upcoming election, okay, in the hopes that we will see a change in the control of our Senate and our White House, in hopes that you, all of you, will go out there and vote for whoever you believe will take this nation in the right direction. I may disagree with your choice, but I will defend to the death your right to make it. This nation has changed administrations, 46 times now? And not once has it been done with violence, a coup, a bomb, or a takeover by anyone other than you, the nation, and your franchise and willingness to exercise it. I'm hoping, ladies and gentlemen, and my friend Linda reminded me, 44 times we've changed. We will have changed administrations 45 times with this election, okay, whether we get a new president or not. And this great nation for over 200 years has done it without violence, without despotism, because you are the nation, ladies and gentlemen. You are self-governing. As individuals and as a people. Please join us every night of the week, ladies and gentlemen, for one of our shows here on Blog Talk Radio from www.patriotfamilies.com. Constitution Hour on Monday, Patriot Family Chat on Tuesday, Right from the Left Coast every Wednesday, Patriot Education with good old me on Thursdays, Foreclosure Help on Friday, Breaking the Illusion on Saturday, and Frank is Fed Up on Sunday. Visit our website, join our blogs, talk to us in our chat room, call into our radio shows. Let your voices be heard. Give us your opinions, your concerns, and your ideas. We can and will continue to keep this nation the freedom she has been since our founders gave us the United States of America. Blessed be everyone, and hopefully we'll see you right here next week, 7 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, Thursday, for another episode of Patriot Education. Good night. God bless. Okay, another one done. Thank you so much, please.